What makes sportswomen tick? What motivates us? What inspires us? Who is the person behind the athlete? My name is Valerie Mulcahy. I'm a 10-time All-Ireland winner with Cork and a 6-time All-Star. Now I'm turning host and talking to some of Cork's greatest sports stars, or those who have a strong connection with Cork. In this series, I'm speaking to 6 inspiring athletes to find out their answers to these questions. This is Hear Me Roar with Valerie Mulcahy.
I got the eye of the tiger, a fighter, dancing through the fire, 'cause I am a champion.
My guest today is an Olympian, a World Cup finalist with the Irish women's hockey team, and is now competing at a brand new sport in the form of electric scooter racing.
Hi, I'm Nikki Daly. I'm on Hear Me Roar with Valerie Mulcahy.
On today's episode, I speak to Nikki about the Irish hockey team, that incredible World Cup run, becoming an Olympian, and more. But first, I spoke to her about her introduction to hockey and having to make a difficult choice between hockey and Gaelic football.
I got into hockey when I started secondary school. It was definitely a new sport. I'd never come across it before until I went to secondary school, and quite honestly I was quite reluctant to play it because it's a bit like yourself. I was mad into the Gaa, and that was sort of the sport that I felt most comfortable with, and it was the first sport I got to play in a team sport in. So I got introduced to hockey purely because it was sort of the main sport in the school that I went to, but you know, got over the reluctancy of it and started to really like it, found it quite challenging, and I think that's probably why I wanted to kind of stick with it in the end.
Was there something about going into the uniform shop and being introduced to something?
Yeah, I remember the day my mum brought me into the uniform shop, and already didn't want to get the uniform because I just didn't want to go to the school at the time, but there was a big box of like sticks in the corner, and just before we were about to leave, she spotted them and was like, "Oh, by the way, you'll need one of these," and whipped one of them out. And I was like, "What is it? I've never seen anything like it before." I thought it was like a hurl, or meant to be a hurl. I was like, "That is definitely wrong. Like, there's something wrong with that." And she's like, "Oh no, this is a hockey stick. Like, you'll need this." And I was like, "What for? What like?" And she's like, "Oh, you're going to play hockey when you go to high school." And I was like, "Never heard of hockey." And she was like, "When we get home, I'll show you how to play it." And so she gave me the stick anyway and put a ball down in front of me. And she showed me how to play it. But when I took up the stick to try and do what she had done, I started to use it like an ice hockey stick, using both sides of it. And she was like, no, you can only use one side of the stick. And I just, this just was like, this is so stupid. Like, and I just threw the stick away and I was like, "I'm not playing it. That's such a stupid game. You can only use one side of the stick." But that was the challenge, I suppose, trying to just control this little ball with just one side of the stick. Turned out to be the sport I chose.
So you spoke earlier when you were in primary school playing football, or you weren't used to hockey. How did you have to make a choice? Was there a time in your life where you decided, had to make a decision?
Yeah, and it was tough because I had just kind of gone back to playing Gaelic football at a bit of a high level.
What level?
I was playing on the, got called into the Dublin Senior Ladies team, and was sort of there, not for very long, but I was training with them, played a bit of the National League with them in 2009, and it was the same year that I got called into the Irish women's hockey team. So it was tough because I was actually really enjoying playing the football, and I just got like kind of introduced to now this new level of playing Irish hockey, and didn't really think, you know, I'd have to make a decision, but it came down to it that actually the training load was just too much, and you know, one team wanted you for this competition and another team wanted you for this competition. So it just came to a point where I had to sit down and speak to both coaches, and I just remember the conversation with the Irish coach, and all I remember from the conversation was my name and the Olympics in the same word, in the same sentence, and that was it. I was like, that was everything. So much happened in that conversation, because one, I didn't even know hockey was an Olympic sport, so that was like, I had to go and just process that for a moment. But then also the fact that he was putting my name in the same sentence as in, this team could go to the Olympics and you could be part of it, was like a whole different, yeah, it was like a dream just started there and then, and that was became my focus.
Many Olympians will tell you that it was always their dream to compete at the Games from a young age. However, for Nikki, this dream didn't start until later in life.
We had a previous guest on, and she said at the age of 9, she wanted to be an Olympian. Well, did you have that draw to be in the Olympics, or do you have any memory of going, God, I think I'll aspire to be that?
Yeah, I like, from a young age, I never had the Olympic dream. I suppose I never believed I could be an Olympian from a young age, but I played everything. Like, sport wasn't really sort of put on me from a young age. You know, my family didn't really push me into anything, or I don't think they really had any real aspirations for me to become, you know, a high level athlete in any sport. I think they just wanted me to be active and to play sport, because, you know, they got so much joy out of it. But so I didn't have that real, you know, oh, I want to be an Olympian from a very young age. It was something that only really came into my life when I was 21, when I, you know, started playing on the Irish hockey team and realised that hockey was an Olympic sport, and there was an opportunity there that if I could make the team, there's always a chance that you could make the Olympics. So yeah, it's a funny one. Like, I suppose when I was younger, all I wanted to do was be a racing driver, and at that, it was never about being a Formula One driver or a professional. It was just, I just want to be a racing driver like my uncle and my dad. But yeah, it's funny how things turn out.
Now, that dream took a long time to become a reality. You know, tell us about those hard moments in your life, or the struggles of trying to get to the Olympics as a team.
Yeah, I think I suppose I was probably a bit naive to think, you know, I was going to just make this decision, go play hockey and go to an Olympics like the next year or 2 years later or whenever it was. But it was not the case at all. In fact, you know, it took 12 years to actually get to an Olympic Games, and it took, you know, that was the first time ever that the Irish women's hockey team had even been in an Olympic. So it had never been done before. So again, I didn't know any of this information at the start. But it was hard. Like, you know, you're always trying to compete with teams that have maybe been established in the sport for a lot longer than we were. We're very much amateur, and like, it still is an amateur sport, but you know, the program that we can put in place now, and the level of the training and the level of, I suppose, the contact time that you get now is much higher than it would have been. But you're still always trying to compete with nations who have professional setups, who have, you know, full-time programs in place. So we were always trying to compete against that, and it was always quite hard, because it wasn't that we didn't have the players to play at that level or at that standard. It was just, we needed more time together, and we needed more games against, you know, good opposition. And so we were just always playing catch up to, you know, the likes of even Great Britain, who are so close to us on the map. But also, like, you know, they only just entered a sort of a centralisation full-time programme probably around just before 2012. And like, to see where they've gone from that Olympics all the way to now with their full-time programme is phenomenal. Like, they've 3 Olympic medals in those last 3 Olympics. So
from investment, do you believe?
Yeah, from the level of investment that they've had, and just recognising that, like, you know, if they have the quality of the players there, they can compete on the world stage, then why not put a programme in place to support them? And it's very evident to see how much they've, you know, got from that over the last like 12, 15 years. So that was always a struggle for us to try and, you know, match what other nations were doing. And every time you went to compete against them, like, it was just so hard to be anywhere near that level, even just from a physical point of view. Do you know what I mean? They were just so much fitter, stronger, faster. And then, you know, we gave it everything we had, I suppose. And I think the closest we got, and probably the most disappointing, you know, time in the last 12 years is probably the Rio Olympics when we lost in sudden death penalties. And we had played some of our best hockey in that tournament and we topped our pool. You know, we'd beaten South Africa, we'd beaten USA, we'd beaten teams who were ranked ahead of us who had been, you know, had a lot of investment behind them and had these sort of semi-professional programs in place. So that was really hard to take. It was really hard to think, God, how can we get any better? Like, that was everything that we had. We'd committed everything. People had taken time off work. They'd changed their, you know, their schedules to suit this sort of program that we'd put in place. It was very hard to see how we'd be able to sustain and maintain that. But, you know, I think it when you get so close to something and you see how much you've, how far you've gone, it does spur you on. Like, there is an additional motivation there to go, we can't leave it here. Like, yeah. You know, we just
put so much in.
Yeah, we put so much in. We just
point to no return. Like,
got to get it over the line. So it was, yeah. And like, look, we got rewarded, I suppose, with the 2018 World Cup and then finally the Olympics in 2019.
Being in the Olympics, I know it was altered in terms of, you know, fans not being able to attend. But did you still relish that experience?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that was, for our sport, like, that is the pinnacle. So that was always the goal. Like I said, you know, when I realised Olympics could be something that I could be involved in, that became the dream. So, you know, it doesn't matter in what capacity you're going there in, like, if COVID, non-COVID, it was always going to be a special occasion. And just even to be picked and be part of the team was really, really special.
Well, you had a challenge in that because the delay, I know you're young, but you're the oldest on the team. I don't mean to do that. But, like,
yeah, thanks for bringing that up.
The delay with COVID, like, was there a time where you thought, I'm not going to get to achieve this?
Yeah, I honestly was like, you know, 12 years was long enough to wait. And then all of a sudden they were adding an extra year. And it was, yeah, it was hard. It was hard because, you know, you were so stop-start with the training and COVID really impacted on that and what you could get out of your training, and you were training from home. And, you know, hockey is a very demanding sport and, like, it's very, like, high intensity. So if you're not getting that high intensity training all the time, it's very hard for your body to stay at the right place all, you know, all the time. And the older that you are, even harder it is. So I had a little bit of an injury as well with my knee, and that kind of set me back. So it was all just happening really close to the time of the Olympics. And yeah, there was, you know, I think I was out of the team for longer than I was in it. Like, in terms of being selected, I think it was only very much at the very end where I had an opportunity to try and prove myself that I just did enough to get there. So it was really difficult because you'd spent all this time trying to get to this dream. You know, you'd qualified, but didn't mean to say you were on the flight yourself going. And so it did feel like, you know, it was starting to slip away a little bit, but I'm just glad that I could do enough and yeah.
Was there a highlight when you were in Tokyo? Was there something that stood out? I mean, you essentially left on the biggest stage with a perfectly numbered 200 cap, you know, like, it kind of all worked out in the end of it.
Yeah, I think that I honestly tried to be so, I suppose, present, as they say. Like, you know, you can go through a lot of your career and it can just pass you by, and, you know, you're always just waiting to get to the next thing. And I really made a conscious effort, like, going to the Olympics to really, like, take it all in and be as sort of present, because I knew that this was going to be the last tournament for me. I knew this was going to be it. Also, it was the Olympics, you know, I knew I was never going to be here again in any sport. So I was like, you know, just wanted to kind of take it all in and not put too much pressure on, you know, the result or on myself. But I think probably the highlight was the last game, as emotional as it was, you know, 200 caps, you know, with the girls that I'd been playing with. Some of them I've been playing with for the last 12 years. And I knew some of them were also going to retire as well. So I think that was sort of special to be able to do that, and to do it on your own terms is kind of, I suppose, what everyone wants, you know.
And in terms of hockey highlights, what would have been your highlight? Like, for me, I think being at that match where you qualified against Canada and it was absolutely lashing up in Donnybrook Stadium. You know, you putting yourself out there, putting yourself under that immense pressure to take a penalty. You know, talk me through that actually, because that's an unbelievable feat to help your team get there. I think it's, I feel like watching it has sparked the change in that penalty shootout.
Yeah, I mean, like the shootouts are not pleasant at all. I mean,
well, for spectators, they're amazing.
Yeah, they're great
they
for
changed
spectators,
it.
And they certainly make it really exciting, definitely. But as a player, like, you can never be prepared for it. Like, it's, you know, you can prepare yourself, and I had prepared. I remember we had a meeting, sort of the day before, with the goalie coach Nidge, just to kind of go through like what their keeper does, and particularly in shootouts. So you do like look at these things. It's not just step up and go, geez, I hope this goes in. Well, you do that as well, but you know, you have some sort of idea of what you're going to do. And you know, I kind of in my head said, look, if I get asked to take one, because there was 8 of us and only 5 are going to be picked to take one. So,
and was that down to the manager? He'd going to pick on the day?
He was going to pick on the day, yeah.
Okay.
Now, I had like not a great time with shootouts, because the last time I did a shootout was in the World Cup and I missed. So, but there was part of me that was like, you know, you want to sort of redeem that and not leave that
ghost.
Yeah, or like have this sort of mental sort of
block
with shootouts. So I did practice them like quite a bit on the lead up to the Olympics and stuff, or to the Olympic qualifier. And I'd done my prep, I knew what I was going to do, showed it to Nidge, and he just said, look, that's a really good, you know,
describe
thing.
It. So you have to start at the halfway line, don't you?
You have to start at the halfway.
8 seconds.
No, not the halfway line, 25, the 25 yard line. You've got 8 seconds to take the keeper on and score. So you can do, it's pretty much a free for all. Like, you can throw it up on your stick like a camogie and smash it as hard as you can. But the problem is that the keeper will normally come out and close the angle. So it's very hard to make that happen. You kind of need to make the keeper move and beat them in order to, you know, make it a real clear cut shot. So my plan was to, you know, draw the keeper out a little bit, slow down, and then quickly move the ball left to right, and then just kind of slip it past. So that's,
fake it,
that
like.
Was sort of my thing to do all the time anyways, left right drag and make the keeper move and then just slot it past her. But I showed this to Nidge, and he said, look, this will work, but you just need to take it a bit wider past the keeper, like you need to make her move a little bit more. And so, you know, honestly, I didn't think I was going to get asked to take one. I just didn't see myself in that position. I didn't see the coach ever picking me to take one.
Why do you think he did?
I don't know why he did. Honestly, I'm not sure.
Did you have a good game?
I don't know. Like, was only okay. We didn't score. So, like,
yeah.
I don't know if anyone really had a good game. It was such terrible weather, you know. I don't know why he picked me, but you know, I had my shin guards off, my gum shield out. To me, the game was finished for my part in the game. Like, and he just came up behind me and was like, "You ready?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I was like, not one bit ready. I need to put my shin guards back on, put my gum shield back in, and I just tried to, you know, say, okay, just stick to what you're doing. Like, just focus on timing of, you know, slowing the keeper down, moving the ball left to right. And look, I took the ball so wide, I think I ended up on the baseline, but somehow managed to get the ball in the back of the net. And I just remember, I think I fell on my knees or something, and by the time I got back up, I felt like my legs were just going to literally collapse from under me. Like, it was such a feeling of relief,
yeah,
but also like there was this nervousness like there as well.
It was very intense. Yeah, I actually was in the stand and your mom had gone to the bathroom, came back, and was like, oh, at least now, you know, Nikki won't be involved in the penalty shootout. And I had to say, actually, Carvel, she is. So there's that terror. Like, for my family, I think some of them didn't watch it, they put their hands in the...
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. And then, like, you know, we went to sudden death on that, and I was like, oh my God, am I going to have to take another one? And then, thankfully, Roisin scored the winner, and I didn't have to go to another one, because I was like, I don't know if I can do this again. Honestly, it drained every ounce of energy from my body.
And can you remember that feeling of knowing we've actually made it? I know you're saying you're not necessarily on that plane, but you know, the team, we've actually achieved it. We were going there.
Yeah.
Before COVID hit, and before you thought maybe it's not going to happen. But
just the emotion after that night. Like, I mean, you know, I remember just like every time I saw Shirley or saw one of the girls that I knew, you know how much this means, you know, like this, you, I know that you know, and you know that I know how what much this been. Means and how long it's taken us to get there. And like me and Shirley were roommates and we're, you know, the two old fogies on the team, like the two grannies, and we were just, you know, we were so alike in where we were and what we were trying to do and how tough it was on us to keep going and to get there. And so like when I saw her and, you know, we were in roommates that night and everything, and we celebrated and for the whole team, like it was just incredible, you know, like everyone had played their part, and it wasn't just that team, it was everyone who had gone before that as well and helped to, you know, to shape the team as you go. And that's all you can do, you know, at the end of the day, you hope that the next people that come along will take what you've learned and take what you've done for the team and just move it forward. Brilliant. Again, like, yeah. So
in 2018, Ireland shocked the hockey world by reaching the World Cup final in London, ultimately losing out in the decider to the Netherlands. For a nation watching on, it was an incredible journey as a group of part-time amateur athletes got all the way to the final on the world's biggest stage. However, for Nikki and her teammates, it was the culmination of years of hard work, with a little help from Mariah Carey on the way.
So yeah, like two cycles of not getting into the Olympics, and then was the World Cup a bit of a surprise, or how would you have regarded that?
I think the overall result was a surprise. Like, to medal was definitely a surprise, but I think, you know, to get into the knockout stages wasn't really a surprise for us, because I think we knew we'd been knocking on the door for a while with sort of teams ranked ahead of us, and we'd been, you know, we'd beaten the likes of Germany, we'd beaten USA, we'd beaten these teams, like even GB in some practice games we'd beaten them in, so we knew we could. But it didn't matter if you did it sort of in a practice game or a friendly tournament or, you know, these kind of things, or a test match, we had to do it when it came to, you know, the big occasion. And we'd never been in a big occasion before. Like, for this team, it was the first time any of us had played in a, you know, a World Cup or played on the world stage. So I think the fact that we knew that we were capable of it, we had, you know, we'd progressed so much as a team during those sort of practice matches behind the scenes. Nobody knew who we were, like we weren't really on anyone's radar, but we knew ourselves, the progression that we had made. And I think just the fact that there was absolutely no expectation on us, there was no pressure on us, we didn't put pressure on ourselves, but we had a, you know, we had set targets and goals for ourselves, and getting out of the group was one of our main goals, like, and we were very confident we could do that. So, you know, everything else after that was a bonus. But I suppose, like, it's in tournament situations, it's all about momentum. If you get that momentum going, it can take you anywhere. And I think, you know, the other teams were kind of going, what's going on here? Like, the Irish hockey team are kind of taking all the glory here, even though they've only just got out of the group. But it made everyone stop and kind of say, what's going on? Like, this is the second lowest ranked team. They should be on the flight home. Like,
well, I think singing Mariah Carey as well probably caught their attention.
Yeah, I'd say whatever about the other teams in the tournament, I'd say the people walking past us every morning doing our stretching in the middle of London City going to work were probably like, what are these girls on? Like, you know, singing Mariah Carey All I Want for Christmas at 8 o'clock in the morning in the middle of July was probably not what they expected to hear. But again, that was sort of, I suppose that sort of, that gives you an idea of the sense that was in the team. Like,
spirit.
We had, you know, young people on the team who, it didn't matter if you were young or old, like none of us had ever been there. We'd never been to a World Cup, but especially for the young ones so early in their career to be able to be on the world stage, you know, the first thing that a couple of them said was, it feels like Christmas. Like, and that was where it came from, you know, waking up on the first morning of our first match felt like it was Christmas. It was like so exciting. We didn't know what was going to happen, what to expect. And that's kind of where it came from. It just grew legs from there.
So instead of Santa arriving, the World Cup had arrived.
Yeah, that's, well, nice. Silver medal at least.
Did you get any nugget of advice, or did anything have a lasting impression on you that someone else said to you, like a piece of advice, whether this be in life or in your sporting endeavours?
Yeah, it was something that I said earlier on. It was something that my uncle Derek actually said to me. It was like around the time when I was like starting to maybe play competitive sports, so maybe like 18, 19, with like, you know, I was playing underage with Ireland under 18 in hockey, and I was playing Dublin Senior B or something at the time. And to me, like, I was like, oh, it's great, like, I'm playing this and playing that or whatever. And he was like, and so what's the plan after that? And, like, you know, where are you going to go with this? And I was like, oh, Jesus, I don't know. Like, I just go every week. Like, that's...
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, no real, like, long-term plan here. But he brought it back to, like, you know, well, if you want something to happen, you know, if you want to make it to the team or to, you know, wherever it is, you know, on the Irish team, he was like, you need to, you know, if you want it badly enough, it'll happen. Like, and that was something that always stuck with me. Like, I always felt, it always brought me back, I'm not doing enough here. I'm not doing enough. Like, I'm not working hard enough in the gym, or didn't train hard enough this day. It was always, that always stayed in my head. Like, do you want this enough? Like, do you want this? And like, how badly do you want it? And that just always stuck with me. And I always, it's something that you can see clearly now in other athletes. Like, it's always the first question I try and ask myself about them, like, how badly do they want? And you can see it. Like, you can see the ones that really, really want it. Dude. You can see the ones that are just like, I'll just rely on my talent. Sure, that'll get me, that'll be enough, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was something that really stuck with me, you know, like, maybe I was one of these kids that relied on my talent all the way up, and then that was a moment where he just kind of was like, well, how badly do you want it? Because it's not just going to happen for you, you know?
And in terms of legacy, what would you like your legacy to be?
I think just that I worked hard for, like, whatever I got, and it didn't come easy, and that I did sort of change my mentality around, you know, how I was going to make it. But yeah, just, I think that I worked hard and I did want it enough, and hopefully that can maybe inspire others to do the same. Who knows?
Do you have a question for me?
Who's better at golf?
So that's your question. I guess you are.
I know. I actually would like to ask you the same question of, if you were a young girl again now. You've already answered.
Sorry, well, what?
What, just like, would you have chosen a different path?
No. Thankfully, I can say that I am very grateful for the joy and excitement and friendships that I've gained from playing with, you know, Rockbawn and with Cork, and I'm a very proud Cork person, so delighted to have been able to put on that jersey for so long. Would I have liked to have be playing now, like, in an environment where they're better looked after? Yes, but I think I can kind of be content in the fact that I, you know, made a few small changes with the GPA and WGPA to ensure that was going to happen. So I'm grateful and thankful that I played GA, but had I not, I would definitely have liked to have played like soccer as a professional. But I think at the time I wouldn't have been able to make much money. Like, I think it's only now there.
No, sorry, but I mean, though, like, if you were the person in the current environment, so not going back and making a different decision,
based not knowing what's coming.
No, like, if you were a young girl today, and you had the option to play on the Irish women's soccer team and go to a World Cup, or you had to make a choice. Now you're 15, like, you're 15, 16, but you've been called into the Irish team and you've been called into the Cork team. You were saying you would still go and play with Cork.
That's a tough question.
Sorry, that was the question I meant. Like, if you were a young girl now, you know, would you still choose the same path?
It depends. If I had your thinking and going, oh yeah, we're going to get to the World Cup, and I'm going to be on the team and key player.
But sure, you didn't know at the time when you played for Cork that you were going to win 10 All-Irelands.
Yeah, I better answer this question. Oh, pardon me, maybe because it's so current and the women have gotten to the World Cup, and we know that I'm playing a bit of five-a-side soccer, that love for soccer has kind of come back. So, oh, that'll be a tough one. I think probably because I could go pro in that sport, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
But I, you know.
Yeah, but isn't it like it's amazing to think like what could have been for so many, and for so many women who have come before us, like who were unbelievable athletes and maybe didn't get to have that opportunity to, you know, to make the most of it.
Well, thanks, Nikki. It's been a pleasure, and thank you for sharing your thoughts and your journey with us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Val, and I look forward to you buying me dinner later.
A huge thanks to Nikki Daly for popping by and chatting with me. And yes, I did buy her dinner later. My guest next week on Hear Me Roar is a world and European gold medal winner, Cork's own Sunita Paspore.
And then I feel like it was too far gone, and I was scraping the barrel for the whole winter, and tried to kind of do my best. And even in the interviews, like, you know, before the Olympics, I was the medal favourite and stuff. And it was so hard to pack it all away and not to tell them, no, I'm not anymore. I'm fighting here to actually try to keep my performance in a decent level. Like, I was so bad. Like, all the other girls performance were escalating. Mine was going right down.
Hear Me Roar was presented by me, Valerie McKay, and produced and edited by Rory O'Hagan for Cork's Red FM. Music was by the wonderful Jack O'Rourke. Thanks to my friends at mygames.ie, who created a beautiful memento for each of my special guests. Gurev Magot, as Clusa Hurt Dominov, Ogspeg Mea Kaint Liv Galua. Slán.